From Latrobe to Camp Hill, Altoona to Westchester, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, state government has put together a list of so-called life-sustaining and non-life-sustaining businesses. But the list is rife with errors that have disrupted vital manufacturing supply chains. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is here for a Capital Watch discussion. And state government deciding which businesses can remain open and which must close has been a disaster. But suspending regulations and removing bureaucratic roadblocks to providing health care services is a success. I'll have a town hall commentary on what works and what does not. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to David Taylor in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. A new relief fund for small businesses struggling to deal with the financial fallout of the coronavirus pandemic has been established in Pennsylvania. Known as the COVID-19 Working Capital Access Program, the $100 million fund will provide loans of up to $100,000 to businesses with 100 or fewer employees. The fund was established after the governor ordered the mandatory closure of so-called non-life-sustaining businesses. Information on the loan program and applications can be made through each county's certified economic development organization. Despite a ban on elective surgeries and a need to shift medical supplies to caring for coronavirus patients, the Wolf administration has allowed Planned Parenthood to continue performing abortions. The Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation issued a release calling for a ban on abortions during the crisis, saying Planned Parenthood continues to conduct business as usual while consuming essential medical supplies. Westmoreland County in southwestern Pennsylvania posted the largest population decline of any county in the Commonwealth, according to statistics recently released by the U.S. Census Bureau. The county's population has declined by 16,172 residents since 2010. The drop is attributed to an older population, resulting in more deaths than births in the county and in the Pittsburgh region as a whole. Cambria County, which includes the city of Johnstown and Erie County, also posted significant population losses. Meanwhile, Cumberland County, west of Harrisburg, Lehigh County, which includes Allentown, and Chester County in suburban Philadelphia have seen significant increases in population over the past decade. Speaking of the census, last Wednesday was the date to be used when determining where a person's residence is. This, as the U.S. Census Bureau has been forced to suspend operations for 1 month due to the coronavirus crisis. By law, the Bureau must complete the official census count by December 31st. The new number will be used to determine the allocation of federal dollars to states and municipalities, and to draw new congressional and legislative district lines. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. This is the time our Capital Watch crew normally gathers, but to observe social distancing guidelines, we're going to talk by phone today with David Taylor, who hosts the roundtable discussions. Dave, of course, is president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and joins us now from his home. Dave, good to talk with you. Dave, of course, during this time, we have many, if not most, businesses shut down. There was a whole lot of confusion regarding the process. Can you talk a bit about what took place?
Well, yes. It's very unfortunate that on the late afternoon of March 19, that the governor made a unilateral order regarding business closure, and he didn't communicate with anybody in the business community, didn't communicate with legislators or legislative leaders, and so the governor's order was overly broad, imprecise, and that regrettably that this has created a cascade effect of damaging Pennsylvania production, because what happened is that the governor's office, they went down a list of industrial codes I think they went eeny, meeny, miny, mo to say, well, we do need this, we don't need that, so this is okay, but that's shut down, and so on and so forth on down the list. But there's no recognition of supply chains, distribution networks, critical vendors to those businesses and industries deemed essential. And so we have been, ever since that time, that PMA has been fielding calls trying to help people where they say, okay, the governor said that our business, our sector is life-sustaining and therefore essential, but we can't get our raw materials, our component parts, our key vendors are shut down, our logistics is shut down, that our warehouses are shut down, that there are all these different choke points all over the place that are preventing the productive sector from mobilizing to fight the pandemic. And again, just to be very clear, Loman, that at this time, that public health, public safety has to be the top priority. We've got to stop or at least slow the spread of this deadly Wuhan coronavirus. But to do that, we are going to need as much of our manufacturing capacity as we can keep up and running to produce the materials, the supplies, the equipment that our frontline healthcare responders are going to need. And so that's what our grave concern is about here, that because of the slapdash and haphazard nature of the governor's order, that our people can't do what they need to, what of course they absolutely want to help fight back against the pandemic. And we've got just like an avalanche of examples. One of the examples that I'll point to, something that I worked on, that the governor in his initial order declared battery manufacturer to be non-essential. Well, the largest employer in Pennsylvania by staff is East Penn Manufacturing in Berks County. They're a battery manufacturer. The facility in Berks County is actually the largest single-site lead battery manufacturing site in the world. East Penn is the second largest battery manufacturer in North America. Every last one of those ventilators that we need for coronavirus patients in ICU has a battery in it. So the idea that we're going to knock out of production one of America's national leaders in making this critical piece of critical life-saving equipment is representative of the overall struggle that we are having with the governor's office. There's a waiver process that they have put in place, but it's not transparent, and it also doesn't seem to be in any way uniform or systematic. That we have reports of businesses being turned down for waivers, even though they support an essential industry, and even though that business's competitors in the marketplace received waivers. I mean, to the point where that the businesses that got the waivers are advertising, hey, if your regular vendor can't take care of you, come see us. So there's a lot of frustration along those lines. I mean, what we really need is, so it was earlier in the afternoon on March 19 when the governor made his announcement earlier that day that the United States Department of Homeland Security, under one of its agencies, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, it's CISA, they call it CISA. So we're talking about this part of government, the federal government under Homeland Security, issued guidance to say these are the things that are essential for our response to the pandemic. And so Governor Wolf and his office, that they have cited the CISA list, but they haven't made it definitive. They're just using it as guidance, to the point where, okay, if you're not covered, look to the CISA list, and if you are on the CISA list, then you should apply to the governor's office for a waiver and wait for us to approve your waiver. And that is just wrongheaded and burdensome. We need the CISA list to be authoritative and definitive, and that if you are on the CISA list, you are waived. You don't have to apply for a waiver from the governor's office and then to wait for their response. And so these are the things that we're pressing for, that the CISA list should be authoritative, that anything that touches an essential industry needs to be waived. Because there's a knowledge problem. No one can know. No, it's not humanly possible to know all of the different steps involved in everybody's manufacturing process. That these things are, they're sprawling, and they're, you know, again, like here's an example, that there was one pharmaceuticals manufacturer that was affected by the governor's closure of timbering and sawmill operations, that this particular medicine that's made by this company, that for shipping it must be crated rather than boxed. So I don't understand why, but obviously they make that medicine. They know what they need, and if you cut them off from their crate maker, they can't ship the medicine. This is another example. I was working with a small family-owned pallet-making company in the Southeast, and again, as wood manufacturer, their business was ordered closed. Well, that pallet maker's biggest customer is Clorox, and so the cleaning supplies, the antiviral wipes and cleaning supplies from Clorox that we need to fight the pandemic, those pallets are necessary for stacking and shipping the crates with the supplies. So again, we need humility by government to recognize that they don't know what they don't know, because the economy is, it's not a machine, it's an organism, and also that we need to respect our employers, our manufacturers, they're makers and doers, and they want to do their duty to respond to this just like everybody else does. So we need to trust them when they say these are the inputs that we have to have for our response. And even, Loman, even to this very moment as we're recording this interview, the textile manufacturing is banned under the governor's list. Well, what are we supposed to make the gowns and masks out of? What are we supposed to use for the linens that we're going to need for the additional hospital beds? It's deeply frustrating, and we've got to get around this. We've got to have a broader, more robust, much more automatic and self-validating approval process for getting these waivers so that the production sector can stand up to fight the pandemic.
Wouldn't it even be better, Dave, to not have a list at all? And initially, the governor had said, we are going to make this a, we strongly recommend this is a voluntary shutdown. Then he came out at the end of the day on a Friday with this mandatory list and created all this chaos.
Yeah.
And while obviously there are some people, if you have a voluntary list, are going to not follow the guidelines, not be in the spirit of what needs to be done here. But given the chaos and the damage that all this has caused, wouldn't it be better just to do away with the list altogether and go on the honor system?
No. I mean, I disagree in the sense there are trade-offs to everything. And I believe what the governor was upset about was that you had businesses that were open where it was like point of purchase, customer gathering businesses. So bars and restaurants, nightclubs and nail salons and things like that, where people were gathering together. And so, yes, I recognize that to slow or stop the spread of the pandemic, that we have to shut down. We saw with the kids going to the beach in Florida, like that's just stupid and dangerous and absolutely must be stopped. But there's a huge difference between those kind of retail, point of sale, public gathering type of businesses versus the productive sector, the makers and doers, structured workplace where, by the way, employers can structure things so that you have all of the protocols for sanitization workstations and social distancing and all of those CDC compliant protocols to prevent the spread of the disease in the workplace. So, I mean, I understand the governor's frustration. And Lumen, in the context of the pandemic, you want to give people, decision makers, some leeway. We are all doing the best that we can under trying circumstances. So even though, as any listener of this program knows, that we have broad and substantive disagreements with the governor, this is not political. We're not trying to dunk on him in the midst of a crisis. I'm just trying to point to the very serious, real-world, repercussions that are preventing Pennsylvania manufacturers from being able to respond to the crisis in a timely fashion, and of course also to the extent that critical industries for America run through the Commonwealth, it's also endangering the nation's ability to respond to the pandemic.
You are listening to Capital Watch. We're doing a little differently today. David Taylor is with us by telephone, not able to do our usual roundtable discussion, but we are talking about the governor's mandatory order requiring so-called non-life-sustaining businesses to close. But Dave, even though we still have this process, the fact that the government is deciding who can stay open and who cannot stay open, and let's just talk about the manufacturing sector. Let's leave retail and all that out of it. Are the waivers coming in a timely process, and how is this impacting the ability of manufacturing, even for some who maybe are not a life-sustaining operation, to shift gears and to start manufacturing products that are needed? For example, you had MyPillow, that pillows may not be considered to be life-sustaining, but they shifted manufacturing and they're now producing masks. Is there a process for companies to do that?
DCED, Pennsylvania's Department of Community and Economic Development, is standing up a protocol for that right now. And I'm grateful to be included in that process at DCED, that the economic development professionals there are working directly with the business community. And that's got to be a next step where we get those businesses, those manufacturers that are able to retool, to get them cranking out the goods, the material that our frontline healthcare providers are going to need. Of course, this needs to be done in coordination with the hospitals and health systems so that we're matching up production with the needs as they exist and getting those things to the places where they are most urgently needed. But I mean, I would argue this is why the governor needs to centralize decision making at DCED, that the professionals there are the ones who best know how to deal with these issues, and that Secretary Davin should be empowered to deal with the economic crisis and all of the economic impacts of the pandemic, the same way that the Secretary of Health has been empowered by the governor to deal with the healthcare crisis. So yes, that we need to make sure that we're doing everything that we can to provide guidance, timely guidance, specific guidance to those manufacturers who can retool, and also to make sure that the new products that they are making are of the correct quality so that they are usable. With when you're talking, Loman, about some of the things that we're going to need, like swabs, that those things have to be made in a sterile environment, because if the swabs would be in any way unclean going in, then you're going to get incorrect test results because you're detecting something other than what came out of the patient, so on and so forth. So we need to make sure that all of those protocols are in place. So this is harder than it looks. And this is why, again, we want to keep as many of these businesses up and running during this period. And Loman, I just want to make another point. We are going to be facing a problem with the workforce, that because the governor's blanket order of the 19th is overly broad, we've seen a lot of businesses close that shouldn't have been closed. Even if they later on get waivers to open back up again, their employees, they got their pink slips, so they have standing to go and file for unemployment benefits, and they have done so. And that the federal relief effort was especially generous with unemployment comp. And again, I'm not blaming anybody here, but the fact is, because the federal benefit is so generous, and we've had so many Pennsylvania businesses closed, even just temporarily, that this is why Pennsylvania leads the nation in applications for unemployment benefits. And so for people who qualify, it makes sense for them personally to stay home, ride out the storm, be with their families, and not risk being infected. But what that means for all of us as a society is we are going to be sorely tried to find enough workers to do the jobs to help stand the economy back up when we get to the other side of this. So, as in any crisis, that the law of unintended consequences is in full effect, but this is a very good reason why we need to reform the governor's process for business closures to keep as many places open as possible, open in the sense of, like, the business is an ongoing entity. You can't collect benefits or paid leave from a company that's under.
And you bring up a very good point here, Dave, as we sort of come to a close in our discussion. How do we get out of this? Is there any talk as to what the end game is yet?
Well, it's too early to think about that, I think, that there's a balance that must be struck, that we to open things up too early is to risk giving the Wuhan coronavirus another chance to circulate and to infect and kill people, and we can't let that happen. But we do need to start planning now for what it's going to be like to bring the economy out of this induced coma that our leaders have attempted to put it in, and it's critical not to wait too long. In the same way that we must not open too early, we also must make sure that we don't delay beyond a healthy point, flipping that switch and trying to turn things back on again, because, I mean, there's going to be a lot of destruction. A lot of businesses, I don't know that they'll be able to reopen again. It's a tragedy, but again, that we need to reflect on we need to equally prioritize both concerns. These things are in tension with one another, but we've got to accomplish them both.
Well, we'll continue to keep an eye on it here on Lincoln Radio Journal. We have been talking with David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. Dave, give us information. How can folks get in touch with PMA, your website, television programs, all those good things?
Oh, you bet. You can find us online at pamanufacturers.org. We have resources for employers dealing with the pandemic at pamanufacturers.org/COVID-19. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective.
David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks, Dave. Thank you.
Thank you, Loman.
And now I'll have a town hall commentary. There is no doubt that America and the world are in uncharted waters. The global coronavirus pandemic has touched every life, and governments at all levels are struggling to contain spread of the virus while at the same time allowing essential services to continue to function. Even in times of crisis, however, there are timeless principles that still apply. State government in particular has run afoul of some of those principles with disastrous consequences and embraced others which have proven to be effective. Chief among the missteps has been Governor Tom Wolf's order that all so-called non-life-sustaining businesses must close their physical locations. The order was handed down at the close of business on a Friday, initially to take effect almost immediately, and it unleashed mass chaos. First and foremost, that order is a monumental abuse of executive authority. Wolf lacks either the constitutional or statutory power to mandate such a ban. Legal challenges have been mounted to portions of the ban, but neither the courts nor the legislature have provided the checks and balances supposedly built into our system of government. State government's stab at micromanaging the private sector has met with the same lack of success as every other such socialistic undertaking. The faceless bureaucrats who developed the list delineating what businesses are essential and non-essential clearly lacked even the most basic understanding of how the economy works. Bans on the manufacturing sector broke critical supply chains and deprived manufacturers of the flexibility needed to shift production to items needed to sustain life. The list, developed without input from the manufacturing sector, allowed the end manufacturers of products to remain open while mandating the closure of those companies that provided them with the necessary components to fabricate the end product. For example, a company that manufactures carbon batteries was ordered closed, even though those batteries are essential to the function of medical equipment needed to provide care to hospitalized patients. A firm that produces auto parts was told to shutter its doors, depriving the United States Postal Service of the parts needed to keep its vehicles on the road. Businesses on the closure list can appeal. Thousands did so, clogging the system and allowing those very same government bureaucrats who erroneously deemed them to be non-essential to rule on their appeal. In other words, people who don't know what they are doing are telling those who do know what they are doing what they can and cannot do. Worse, the waiver process is shrouded in secrecy. The Wolf administration has not made available to the public a list of who has been granted and who has been denied waivers. Investigative reporting also revealed that a company owned by Governor Wolf's family and one owned by Senate President Pro Tem Joe Scarnati were initially exempt from the shutdown order in a blatant act of political favoritism. The governor justifies his action by the need to curtail social interaction and slow the spread of the coronavirus. That absolutely must take place. But state government is not in a position to dictate what is and is not essential, and its efforts to do so have done nothing but create chaos and take away the flexibility the private sector needs to respond to the crisis. So while government management of the economy has predictably been a dismal failure, the loosening of regulations, especially in the provision of healthcare services, has allowed the deployment of previously unavailable or restricted resources. Early on, the Department of State allowed healthcare professionals licensed under its auspices to provide telemedicine services. It also now allows medical staff in other states to practice via telemedicine. This greatly improved flexibility and instantly made medical care available to a wider range of patients. The state also moved to reactivate a larger number of retired doctors and nurses by temporarily waiving continuing education requirements so they can immediately return to service. Likewise, cross-state border restrictions were removed to allow for pharmaceutical providers in other states to provide services in Pennsylvania. Restrictions on nurse licensure requirements have also been relaxed to fight the coronavirus. Legislation, particularly authorizing the expanded use of telemedicine, has been moving slowly through the General Assembly. That restrictions were removed during a time of crisis has demonstrated they are unnecessary and can provide patients with a wider range of healthcare options, even under normal circumstances. We have once again proven that government cannot micromanage an economy and that overregulation is a barrier to the efficient deployment of essential services. Government has often not heeded the lessons of history, which teach us these truisms, but we now have real-time examples of what works and what does not. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 25 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WEXC-FM and WGRP-AM in Greenville, along with WTKT-AM in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.